Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, December 9th, 2025. We will begin with the public safety notices for Bloomington and Normal. Authorities have identified the second victim who died in a house fire east of the White Place Historic District on the morning of November 26th. McLean County Coroner Dr. Kathy Yoder said Hayden K. Stover, 17, of Bloomington died from carbon monoxide poisoning caused by the inhalation of smoke and soot from the house fire, according to preliminary autopsy results. Toxicology testing is pending. Both Hayden and Tashika Stover, 40, who was identified late last month, were pronounced dead at 8:07 a.m. November 26th. Tashika Stover also died from carbon monoxide poisoning caused by the inhalation of smoke and soot related to the house fire, Yoder said previously. The Bloomington Fire Department was dispatched about 7:30 a.m. to a fire in a single-story, single-family home at 1205 East Holm Avenue. Fire crews arrived to find smoke coming from the house and advanced into the home, working to suppress the fire. Firefighters encountered significant challenges advancing hose lines into the home due to severe hoarding conditions that hindered access, according to the release. During their search of the home, fire crews found the two victims who were deceased in an area of the home that was not directly affected by the fire. The circumstances surrounding the fire remain under investigation by the Bloomington Police Department, Bloomington Fire Department, and the County Coroner's Office, according to a joint news release. Anyone with information related to the incident is asked to contact Detective Weston Gresham at 309-434-2570. The Town of Normal's emergency and community notifications application was breached by an organized cybercriminal group last month, town officials said. Notify Normal, also known as Code Red and operated by Crisis 24, notified the town in late November that its system had been compromised midway through the month, said Kathy Olofsson, Communication Director for Normal, in an email on Monday. Olofsson said the town posted a message about the incident on normal.il.gov/notify-normal and is regularly updating the website as new information becomes available. She added that the system and data is not owned or maintained by the town. Names, addresses, email addresses, phone numbers, and associated passwords used to create profiles were potentially linked to the breach, according to the town's website. We believe that data associated with the OnSolve Code Red platform was removed from our systems, said Crisis 24 in a statement. While data appears to have been published online, we are still determining whether it came from our systems, and we cannot confirm the scope or exact elements at this time. We deeply regret the inconvenience this situation has caused. Our investigation is still underway, and these reviews can take time to complete thoroughly, Crisis 24 added. The Code Red platform was decommissioned immediately and is no longer available, according to the town. This incident was contained only to this platform. In an email Monday, Olofsson said as of October 2nd, 300 people were subscribed to Notify Normal, but the town does not know how many of those were managed accounts with an email address and password, and how many were subscribed via the text to enroll feature. The system is currently inactive, and a new portal is being created for Normal residents. Notify Normal and Code Red subscribers who have reused their password for any other personal or business accounts are being urged to change those passwords immediately. A new portal is currently being created for Normal residents. By March 31st, those who signed up for Notify Normal will be transferred to a new system, town officials said. You can visit normalil.gov/notify-normal to learn more about this situation. Now, turning to the front page, where we have Senate hopefuls look to economy. Three Democrats vie over helping cost of living, by Ben Zielinski with Capital News, Illinois. Recent polling by Reuters found that 45% of voters list cost of living as their top concern heading into the 2026 election. With that in mind, the three top Democrats vying to become the party's nominee for U.S. Senator in Illinois have released proposals detailing how they plan to make life more affordable for Americans. The cost of living is just too darn high, which is why I am putting forth a menu of policy proposals to drive down the cost of living, make it possible for everyday folks to buy a home, send their children to quality public schools, start a business, continue their post-secondary education, afford their life-saving prescription drugs, and more, U.S. Representative Raja Krishnamoorthy, a Schaumburg Democrat, said in a statement Tuesday releasing his agenda. Krishnamoorthy, Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton, and U.S. Representative Robin Kelly are the most well-known names in a 14-candidate primary to replace retiring U.S. Senator Dick Durbin. The economic plans show plenty of similarities between candidates in a race where they've yet to separate themselves on major policy issues, but they did differentiate in a few key areas in terms of how to achieve similar results. The federal minimum wage has been $7.25 since 2009, and each candidate supports raising it to at least $15. But the two incumbent members of Congress go a step further, with Kelly, a Linwood Democrat, proposing increasing the wage to $17 by 2030, and Krishnamoorthy proposing raising the wage to $15 and then tying it to inflation so it will increase in subsequent years. Here are other ways their economic plans compare. Each candidate announced substantial proposals to address housing affordability. Stratton's plan calls for creating tax incentives to encourage construction companies to build homes below the median price point, creating a tax penalty for hedge funds that buy single-family homes in hopes of keeping them affordable, and restricting the ability of artificial intelligence to set rents and screen applicants. Krishnamoorthy said he wants to reestablish an Obama-era refundable tax credit for qualified first-time home buyers in their first 5 years of ownership. He also called for opening more land for residential development by rezoning vacant commercial buildings. Kelly supports capping annual rent increases. She and Krishnamoorthy also generally support policies that limit a corporation's ability to buy single-family homes. Both Stratton and Kelly say they support the concept of Medicare for All, which would establish a single-payer, government-run health insurance program that all Americans would have access to. Stratton's plan also calls for Medicare to cover long-term care home services, hearing and vision, while Kelly only said it should cover dental and vision. Kelly also wants to expand Affordable Care Act eligibility to more middle-class Americans and increase tax credits available under the Act, though many credits are set to expire at the end of this year. Krishnamoorthy's plan does not indicate he supports the Medicare for All plan, popular among many progressive Democrats. Instead, he calls for allowing Medicare to negotiate prices for more drugs each year and for passing legislation to regulate pharmacy benefit managers in hopes of reducing drug prices. With food prices a top issue in conversations about cost of living, and the Trump administration labeling affordability a Democratic, quote, con job, both Krishnamoorthy and Stratton have proposed ideas to help people struggling to afford to eat. Krishnamoorthy is calling for establishing a national free lunch program that would provide all children at least one free meal each day at school. He also wants U.S. government agencies to promote export policies that would help smaller family farms access overseas markets. Krishnamoorthy said he will push for antitrust legislation that targets grocery stores. Krishnamoorthy has released a TV ad that highlights his opposition to a merger between grocery chains Kroger and Albertsons. Stratton said she would seek to create a permanent grant program that allows states to source food from local farmers to go to food banks. That would allow a similar model as the Illinois Eats program, which fell victim to federal spending cuts earlier this year. Kelly's economic plan did not address food and hunger issues. The candidates' tax proposals reveal some of the most obvious differences between their plans. Kelly's plan calls for establishing a minimum tax on people with an annual net worth of $100 million or more and lifting the cap on Social Security taxes. Christian Murthy wants union members to be able to deduct dues from their taxes and eliminate federal taxes on Social Security benefits. Stratton is calling for the most aggressive tax hikes and cuts by proposing to raise taxes on people earning more than $1 million annually and provide a corresponding tax cut for middle-class earners. Her plan does not address Social Security. Krishnamurthy was also the only candidate to substantially address tariffs in the economic plan and said Congress could change the law to limit the president's ability to use emergency powers to raise tariffs, power that's typically reserved to Congress. The incumbent congressman also said the federal government should make new low-interest loans available to farmers in response to tariffs. Making caring for children more affordable is also a sizable portion of some candidates' platforms. Krishna Murthy wants to make low-interest federal loans available to entrepreneurs who open affordably priced child care centers that also pay workers an undefined living wage. He also proposed raising the child tax credit to a minimum of $4,000 per recipient, up from $2,200 in 2025. Kelly said she supports the Child Care for Working Families Act, which she said would bring down an average family's daily child care costs to less than $15. The legislative proposal aims to make child care free to more people, among other things. Stratton's plan proposed expanding the child tax credit, but does not specifically say how. Each candidate also put forward a few proposals that were unique to their plans. On energy, Kelly said she stands by the bipartisan infrastructure law passed during the Biden administration as an effective way to reduce energy prices. Krishnamurthy said he would push to create more incentives for homeowners to install solar panels and also restore funding for clean energy projects the Trump administration has slashed. Krishnamurthy's plan was the only one to touch on education, as he proposed increasing the maximum Pell Grant award for college students, doubling spending on career and technical education, and requiring colleges to post more information about student outcomes, such as post-college earnings for graduates. Stratton was the only candidate to propose expanding the earned income tax credit, though she did not specify by how much. Next, we have DOJ, Midway Blitz May Return, by Hannah Meisel with Capital News Illinois. An attorney for the Trump administration on Thursday told a federal judge that it is wrong to allege the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's Chicago area Operation Midway Blitz immigration enforcement campaign is over, but declined to give any specifics on when the city may experience another surge of federal agents. The comment came during a hearing Thursday in front of U.S. District Judge Sarah Ellis on how best to wind down a lawsuit initiated earlier this fall by protesters, clergy, and journalists over federal immigration agents' use of riot control weapons like tear gas. Earlier this week, in a surprise move, plaintiff's attorneys asked Ellis to dismiss the case. After a marathon hearing last month that included video footage of U.S. Customs and Border Patrol Commander Gregory Bovino tackling a protester and throwing tear gas canisters into a crowd, Ellis issued a searing ruling granting a preliminary injunction restricting agents' use of force. But the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals halted Ellis's order, siding with the Trump administration's argument that the judge overstepped and impermissibly infringed on how the executive branch conducts law enforcement activity. The appeals court's stay on Ellis's order came in the days after Bovino and roughly 200 more Border Patrol agents left Chicago for North Carolina. At the same time, the Trump administration sent home approximately 200 members of the Texas National Guard who'd been flown to Illinois in early October to protect immigration agents, but were blocked from deploying by any other federal judges. I'm sorry, I said that wrong. But were blocked from deploying by another federal judge's order. Plaintiffs' attorneys used Border Patrol agents' departure in framing their motion to dismiss as a legal win without addressing the specter of the Seventh Circuit or U.S. Supreme Court gutting Ellis's order or giving the Trump administration any permanent expanded powers against civilians. "We won our case the day they left town," plaintiff's attorney David Owens of Levy & Levy said in a statement on Tuesday. "The people of Chicago stood up to the Trump administration's bullying and intimidation and showed them they were messing with the wrong city." In response, the administration wrote in a Thursday morning filing that the move was transparent procedural gamesmanship, a characterization U.S. Department of Justice Attorney Elizabeth Hedges repeated later during the hearing in front of Ellis. Addressing plaintiff's contention that Operation Midway Blitz was over, Hedges said the administration was pushing back on that as a factual matter. "We're making the point that they're wrong to allege it's over," she said. "They're free to look at news reports and make whatever conclusions on what they want to do in this court." But she demurred when Ellis asked whether immigration agents were returning to Chicago imminently to continue Operation Midway Blitz. "We're not committing one way or the other on the future," Hedges said. Based on news reports last month that Bovino would return to the Chicago area in the early spring with a much larger contingent of agents, Ellis scheduled a trial in the case for March 2nd, telling attorneys during a mid-November hearing that it would make sense that if it does ramp up again, everyone knows what the rules are. But that trial, along with arguments set for later this month in front of the Seventh Circuit, will now be canceled. Hedges also tried to assert that Ellis's dismissal of the lawsuit would bar members of the public from bringing legal action against the Trump administration, alleging possible future violations of their constitutional rights by immigration agents. But plaintiff's attorney, Craig Futterman, of the University of Chicago Law School's Mandel Legal Aid Clinic, disagreed. "The dismissal of this lawsuit can in no way give defendants a free hall pass to beat up press, protesters, priests, monks, months or years from now and commit other constitutional violations," he said. "That's not how the law works." Ellis also told Hedges, "That's not how the law works." And while it was the government's position that no agent did anything illegal or unconstitutional, having watched the videos, having read the reports, having listened to the witnesses, "I strongly disagree," the judge said. Also on the front page, we have "Educators Looking for Math Fix" by Peter Hancock with Capital News Illinois. Each year, the Illinois State Board of Education releases an annual report card with data showing how students are doing in the basic subjects of reading, writing, and math. And each year, when those numbers come out, reporters, teachers, parents, and school officials sift through the data looking for evidence to show whether scores are improving, holding steady, or getting worse. But one trend has been so consistent over the years, it rarely draws much public attention. Overall, students score lower in math than they do in English language arts. That was true in the 2025 report card, which showed only 38.4% of Illinois students overall scored proficient or better in math, compared to 52.4% in English and language arts. Illinois students are not unique in that regard. Nationwide, according to the National Assessment of Educational Progress, also known as the Nation's Report Card, 59% of 8th graders in 2024 scored at or above the basic level in math, the achievement level most closely aligned with grade level expectations, compared to 66% who did so in reading. Even on the international stage, American students do not perform as well in math as their counterparts in many other industrialized democracies. Scores from the 2023 Trends in International Mathematics and Science Study, or TIMSS exam, a project of the U.S. Department of Education's National Center for Education Statistics, showed 8th grade students in the U.S. on average scored below their peers in countries like Singapore, Japan, Sweden, and Australia. In Illinois, officials at the State Board of Education hope to close that gap through the development of a statewide comprehensive numeracy plan. The document will direct not just the way math is taught in the classroom, but how math teachers are trained in the profession and math programs are administered in school districts. Latrinda Knighton, a retired math teacher who is now president of the National Council of Teachers of Mathematics, says the difficulty many Americans have with math is now so common it has become socially acceptable for people to openly admit that they are not just a math person. It's like a badge of honor to some people, she said in an interview with Capital News Illinois. And what you say publicly aloud has a huge impact on impressionable young minds and their outlook on a subject or content area, or their beliefs about themselves. And we have to change that. We can no longer accept that it's okay to say, oh, I'm just not good at math, and so it's okay if I don't understand this. You should say, why is it that I can't make sense of this? But Beth McDonald, an education professor at Illinois State University who trains prospective teachers to teach math in early elementary grades, said she believes the problem of lagging math skills in America is not just a cultural issue. It's more about how we teach mathematics, she said. McDonald traces much of the problem with today's math education techniques to the No Child Left Behind Act of 2001. That's the signature education policy law of the George W. Bush administration that mandated standardized testing in public schools nationwide and tied federal funding to those test results. When you go into a school, you'll see educators all on the same page of the curriculum on the same day, and they're being held accountable to stay on pace with the curriculum, she said. So what we've removed now is the need to even understand where our kids are at in their own learning. Knighton said she has been paying close attention to a project underway in Illinois where the Illinois State Board of Education hopes to reverse the trend by developing a comprehensive numeracy plan aimed at boosting students' math skills statewide. She's also had conversations with the stakeholders at the State Board in the early stages of the project. And from what I have observed, one of the things they've done is looked at this holistically, she said. They actually are looking at developing a plan and actually identifying what numeracy is so that people are understanding. It's not just that we want to raise students' abilities to memorize math facts. We're looking at building procedural knowledge from conceptual understanding. The planning process was modeled after the recent development of a statewide literacy plan, which lawmakers mandated in 2023, and ISBE formally adopted the following year. Unlike the literacy plan, however, the numeracy plan did not begin with a legislative mandate, but was instead initiated by State Superintendent of Education Tony Sanders. It began in April and May when ISBE staff conducted a needs assessment survey of various stakeholder groups, including teachers and other classroom staff, school and district administrators, and regional superintendents of education, to get a clearer sense of what needs to be included in a numeracy plan. The agency then held a summit meeting in June to study the survey results and form a team to begin drafting a plan. An initial draft of the plan was released in October. The agency then held a series of listening sessions to receive feedback from teachers and other educators, which concluded in November. Numeracy is more than arithmetic or the memorization of procedures, reads an initial draft of the plan. As defined in this guidance, numeracy is the ability for all students to confidently understand, interpret, and apply mathematical concepts across all domains of mathematics in a variety of real-world and academic contexts. Much of the 94-page document is technical in nature. One person who took part in a November 4th virtual listening session described it as wordy, with discussion of topics such as the difference between traditional and reform approaches to mathematical instruction. But it also includes discussion of topics that suggest solving the problem of lagging math skills could be costly. Those include the lack of resources in school districts that are still funded far below their adequacy target, and the need for more training and professional development for teachers, to name a few. Agency officials plan to present a second draft of the plan to the state board in February. A final draft is expected to be completed in June. I think they're doing a great job with the numeracy plan so far with regard to how policy can change, McDonald said. But we need some money behind a lot of these initiatives. And some parts of the Veterans Corner we have. Members of the military are trained and empowered to seek their own solutions to problems as they arise. The innovate and overcome culture helps make our military the finest in the world. However, that culture and other parts of being in the military diminish the likelihood that veterans will seek help when they should after they ETS, estimated time of separation, from their military service. Civilian life brings its own issues and stresses to them. The suicide rate among military service members and veterans is still far too high, even though it has been improving. Life has its challenges. You do not have to solve them alone. That's true whether it's an everyday struggle or something more complicated. The VA and the Ad Council are engaged in an initiative titled Don't Wait, Reach Out, to encourage veterans to proactively seek support and resources for any life challenge they face. An estimated 3.5 million veterans who are familiar with the campaign have taken action to seek help when they were struggling. Help is available for you, too. You are not alone. You've got this. Don't wait. Reach out. Visit va.gov / capital letters reach, R-E-A-C-H, / about for more information. And the quote of the day, elected officials is a representative democracy, are supposed to make decisions based upon the will of the electorate, but also on what the politician's perspective is best for the country. Unfortunately, too often politicians fall prey to their party masters and support party agendas that only garner more power to the party and not the best interest of the country or the electorate. Simply ignoring or trying to twist the meaning of a constitutional clause should not override the necessity to use the constitutional process to formally amend it. Quote, if a political party does not have its foundation in the determination to advance a cause that is right and that is moral, then it is not a political party. It is merely a conspiracy to seize power. This was said by Dwight D. Eisenhower. And with that, we conclude the reading of Part 1 of the Pantograph for Tuesday, December 9th, 2025. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with Part 2.